the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, it is that time of the year. It's the time we make New Year's resolutions, and for many of us, it's to lose weight. After all, the Christmas holidays, the cookies, the festivities, some of us put on a few pounds. We might be thinking, how do we take those pounds off? Well, there was a recent study done on the best diets in the United States. It was done by U.S. News and World Reports, and we have one of the doctors that participated in that diet. Dr. David Katz joins us. He's founder and director of Yale University's Prevention Research Center. Doctor, you looked at in this survey 38 diets. Could you explain the criteria in which these diets were selected and evaluated on?
Sure, and good to be with you, Jim. Thanks for fostering the conversation. So I was one of about 20 judges this year for U.S. News and World Report, and I think listeners probably know they publish an annual report on the best diets, and they look at these diets in different categories, best overall, best for cardiovascular disease, best for weight management, and so forth. So it's a multi-phase process, and I've been a judge now for, I think, 7 years, so I've watched it evolve. And basically, editors at U.S. News and World Report want to make this interesting to the widest audience possible. So every year they add to the roster of diets that we're invited to review. So they're sort of canvassing what diets are hot, what are people interested in, and what haven't we included in the mix in previous years that we ought to add. So that's where the process begins, and we're now up to 38 total diets. And some of these, by the way, are commercial weight loss programs like Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig, and others are diet books, and others are kind of general concepts like the Mediterranean diet or the Paleo diet. And then we get online score sheets that include a description of the diet we're evaluating, some basic information about it. Now, of course, you know, those of us who are doing the judging are pretty knowledgeable in this area, so we typically know a fair amount about these diets to begin with, but the editors do an excellent job of providing a synopsis of relevant evidence, and we, of course, can look further if we're so inclined. And then we have to score these diets for things like overall completeness, overall safety, likelihood of benefit for weight loss in the short term and the long term, likelihood of benefit for protection against diabetes in the short term and the long term, likelihood of protection against heart disease short term and long term. So multiple categories, and we have a point system. And so each of the 20 judges anonymously provides points in each of these areas. We're also invited to make additional comments. And then the folks at U.S. News and World Report aggregate the scores. And that's important because what it means is my personal choices may not be at all consistent with the final outcome. I'm just one vote in 20, and if other people score the diets very differently than I do, something I think should score well may not score well overall and vice versa. But our scores are aggregated, and I think it's quite useful for listeners to know that this report then represents the collective opinion of a really good group of diverse nutrition experts. And by the way, Jim, I'm the senior medical advisor for VeryWell.com, which is a source of general health information for the public. And I actually provided kind of an inside peek into this process there. So after listening to us, your audience, if they want more information, can check that out. It's on VeryWell.com. And the title of that piece is Diets on Parade, the Best and Worst of the 2017 Best Diets Report. I tell them what I liked and what I didn't like about the process and the outcome.
Now, in this U.S. News and World Reports, you had several categories: the best diets overall, the best weight loss diets, commercial diets, best diabetes diets, and best diets for healthy living. I want to start with one diet that I was surprised. I had never heard of it before, that got best overall. It was right up there for the best diabetes diet and best diets for healthy eating, and it was called the DASH diet. Tell me a little bit about that diet. What is it, and how hard is it to follow, and why it makes you, from, I guess, your rating, one of the healthiest diets to follow?
Yeah, well, certainly, again, the collective score. I don't know that I would put DASH right at the top, to be honest, although near the top is fine. So it's an acronym. It stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. And this diet was originally put together at the National Institutes of Health. So researchers there were interested in studying what could be done with diet and food to lower blood pressure. There are 50 million people in the United States with high blood pressure. It contributes to strokes and heart attacks and kidney disease. So it's an important question. And they designed various diets and put them head to head. And essentially the one that won was a plant-predominant diet that included some animal food, some lean meats and poultry, fish and seafood, and low and non-fat dairy, which probably has specific blood pressure benefits. And so that overall pattern, so I guess you could call it a flexitarian diet. You know, it's not vegetarian, it's not quite Mediterranean, it's an improved version of the way most Americans eat. No junk food, no highly processed food, but, you know, a variety of foods with an emphasis on minimally processed plants and low-fat dairy. And that diet has been studied extensively, and I think the main reason it comes out on top isn't so much that it's better than an optimal vegan or vegetarian or Mediterranean or Asian diet, but because the evidence is very strong. And, you know, it's easier to say, hey, this diet really works when you've got large randomized clinical trials to look at. And that's the case with DASH. And people interested can just Google DASH diet, and right near the top of your retrieval there will be the site for the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute where those studies were conducted. And because the diet performed so well in clinical trials, it resulted in books being written, recipes for the DASH diet, meal plans being developed. And then with all of that available, the answer to your question, how hard is it to do, is not all that hard. There's really a lot of support now. So you can pretty readily get DASH diet recipes and DASH diet meal planning and DASH diet meal planning at different calorie levels and DASH diet guidance if you want to lose weight as well as reduce your blood pressure, and on it goes. So that's why it's got a lot of name recognition among nutrition experts. It's got a lot of science, good research done, and then a lot of supporting materials. And that combination, I think, is why DASH winds up right at the top of these lists pretty much year after year.
You have, like, for example, best heart-healthy diets. You have DASH along with the Ornish. Now, I know Dr. Dean Ornish is very big on vegetarianism or vegan, where it's basically a plant-based diet. How close are these two diets together?
You know, that's a really excellent question, Jim. And I wrote a paper called Can We Say What Diet is Best for Health in the scientific literature a couple of years ago. And, you know, essentially, I asked exactly that same question. I really like it a lot. So if we look at diets that are good, because our culture carries on all the time as if, you know, my diet can beat your diet and they're so radically different. But I was interested in just that same thing. Hey, if we look at diets that perform well, and Dr. Ornish's diet performs very well, it's reversed heart disease, and we compare them, how different are they really? And the answer is they're much more like one another every time than any of them is like the typical American diet, which, quite frankly, is junk. You know, I mean, we eat a lot of glow-in-the-dark junk in our culture and pseudo-food. None of the good diets include any of that. So, yes, over the years, Dr. Ornish has emphasized low-fat, plant-based diets, although his views have moderated in time. And so he now makes allowance for a wider range of diets. But still, the emphasis is on minimally processed foods, mostly plants. In other words, eat lots of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, and when you're thirsty, drink water. Well, you know what? That's true of the DASH diet, too. It's true of the Mediterranean diets that are good. It's true of the Asian diets that are good. It's even true of the paleo diet, to be honest with you, when it's done right. So almost all diets that are good and reliably associated with good long-term health outcomes emphasize those same fundamental principles. I think that's a really excellent question, Jim. And by the way, when I talk and write about what's wrong with this best diet report, that's one of the things that I don't like about it. It sort of implies that we should go shopping, you know, in this beauty pageant of diets as if we're all just waiting for the best one to come along. Well, actually, we already know what the basic theme of optimal eating is. And so the value in shopping this parade of diets is, you know, if you can find one that works best for you and your family, you know, one where all of the supporting materials make it possible for you to get there from here, well, then that's the best one for you. But the basic theme of feeding Homo sapiens well with, again, lots of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, and water for thirst isn't negotiable. That is the theme that runs through all of the good diets in all of the studies and all around the world.
You know, I have found, I started out with the paleo diet, which is lean protein and fruits, vegetables. The avoidance under paleo, though, you avoid things like grains, you avoid things like rice. When you looked at the paleo diet, I was surprised that was ranked number 36. Can you explain or tell me what put it at the back of the list?
Yeah, and what you say is not unreasonable, Jim. Now, to be clear, most people who go on what they call the paleo diet are interpreting that very loosely. You know, I know a lot of people who eat hamburgers and hot dogs and pepperoni and say they're on the paleo diet to justify that. Well, there was no Paleolithic pepperoni, let's be clear. I mean, our Stone Age ancestors hunted wild animals, and that's the meat they ate, and they ate a wide variety of wild plant foods as well, and they obviously drank only water and so forth. So, you know, you could say, okay, I want to have a Stone Age kind of diet and a Stone Age kind of lifestyle. So I'd say, okay, lots of wild plants, probably a fair amount of insects, by the way, because most experts think our Stone Age ancestors ate insects. You ought to walk miles every day because they did that. You certainly should drink only water because they did that. You should probably get about 100 grams of fiber in your diet every day, which means, Jim, you would not have time for this interview because you'd be in the bathroom right now, so nobody's inclined to do that. So, you know, everybody kind of interprets the paleo diet a little bit loosely. I think my colleagues among the judges are probably somewhat biased against it because of that, because sort of the prevailing version of the paleo diet is, I'm just going to eat a lot of meat. I'm going to eat, you know, bologna and hot dogs. And, you know, I think most nutrition experts roll their eyes at that, and rightly so. That's clearly not good for health. I probably scored the paleo diet higher than many of the judges because I know that, you know, when you look at it through expert eyes, and I have friends and colleagues who are truly expert in the paleo diet, they've really studied it. We are talking about a diet of unprocessed foods, a wide variety of plants, very nutrient-rich foods, and lean meat from wild animals. So if you tell me your diet is a wide variety of vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, and you eat wild salmon and venison, I'm going to have to say that's probably a really, really good diet and probably pretty paleo. You're not getting 100 grams of fiber and you're not eating bugs, but you're pretty darn close. So, you know, it all comes down to whether or not you're doing it right. Most people who do the paleo diet aren't doing it even remotely right. And so the way it's actually practiced, I think, is very misguided. One other point, Jim, and that is I'm a preventive medicine, lifestyle, nutrition expert. I'm a doctor. My focus is on human health. But I've only got one planet, as do you, as does everybody else listening. And we need it. And the simple fact is, you know, in the Stone Age, there were just a few million of us in a big, empty world of inexhaustible resources, and you could pretty much eat whatever you could find. But almost 8 billion hungry Homo sapiens cannot be substantially carnivorous without destroying the world. You know, the water costs of producing beef, for example, are off the scale compared to every other food. So we're draining our aquifers and cutting down rainforests in order to raise beef cattle. We could feed ourselves much more efficiently and use much less water if we ate the plant foods that we feed the cattle to turn them into food for us. The carbon footprint of cattle is massively higher than almost every other food, and on it goes. So I've actually heard one of the world's leading experts on the paleo diet, Dr. Boyd Eaton at Emory University, say, you know, yes, I think it's normal for human beings to eat meat. Yes, I think it's part of our legacy. Yes, I think it's normal for us to crave meat. But in a modern world of almost 8 billion people, it's just too darn bad. We must have plant-predominant diets, and maybe we can learn from the paleo experience about our protein requirements, but we need to get most of that protein from plant foods.
I've read the China study. I've read various books on health. And why is it, doctor, and this relates once again to diets, if you take a look at Asian diets, China, in places in the world where they don't eat as much meat as, let's say, we eat here in the Western world, they have less incidence of cancer, heart disease, and diabetes.
You are exactly right, Jim. And actually, one of the great travesties and potential tragedies of modern epidemiology is that as big countries like China and India undergo cultural transitions and become more affluent, they're saying, hey, I'll have what they're having. And instead of us learning from their time-honored example and getting to the better health outcomes they have, they are importing our lifestyle. So they're eating more meat in China, and guess what? Getting more diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. And they're eating more meat and processed foods in India, and guess what? Same bad outcomes there. So you're absolutely right. These traditional plant-predominant diets are associated with excellent health outcomes. But we've got massive financial interest in peddling to us lots of foods that aren't good for us. I mean, just consider soda, for example. The idea that you should put 12 teaspoons of sugar and some sort of coloring agent into a glass of water, turn it into a beverage that nobody needs, that contributes to excess calories and probably a major component of the obesity and diabetes epidemics, charge a huge premium for it, and by the way, use up 600 liters of water to produce 1 liter of that stuff, and yet, you know, you sell that to us at a massive level that produces huge companies with enormous profits. I mean, there's just a terrible distortion there. So we really have created a culture of pseudo foods and processed foods. And similarly, you know, most of the meat we eat is highly processed. I mean, every supermarket has a whole deli counter of processed meats. And there's enormous profit in selling that to us. So this is mostly profit ahead of public health. And ideally, as more and more of us recognize, hey, yes, I'm interested in my health, and I'm interested in the health of the people I love, my spouse, my kids, but I sure care whether or not there are going to be any lions and tigers and bears left in the world. And I have to appreciate the fact that if I keep eating, you know, bologna and pastrami and pepperoni and hot dogs, that that's going to be one of the reasons why there won't be. And, you know, climate change is being accelerated because of meat-centric diets. And there's enormous worry among climate scientists, environmental scientists, biodiversity experts, and health scientists like me alike about the effects around the world on rising intake of meat. So it's a very, very disturbing trend. And, you know, I think we all have to work collectively to get past it because the evidence is really very clear. And it isn't just somebody like me who knows about it. You just stated it beautifully. It's very clearly established that the traditional diets in the Mediterranean and in China and in India were associated with perfectly good health outcomes, and we are ruining that.
Doctor, let's talk about the role of meat. I've seen some diets that are saying, you know, red meat is okay. Other diets, I know Dr. Dean Ornish's diet often excludes red meat. Let's talk about the role of red meat in terms of its effect on health.
You know, I think there are a couple of key issues here. First, not all red meat is created equal. There's a huge difference between venison or antelope, or for that matter, you know, even free-range grass-fed cattle and highly processed deli meats. And so if you're going to eat meat and you're concerned about your health, I would say eat clean meat, eat unprocessed meat. There are very strong studies linking processed meat to increased risk of cancer, heart disease, and every bad outcome nobody wants to get. The evidence linking unprocessed meat to those outcomes is much weaker, so I think you're safer there. Second, eat less meat. This is one of those cases where there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer. I think some people, it's a traditional part of their diets. Even in the Mediterranean, we talk about the healthy Mediterranean diets, but there is some meat in the Mediterranean diets, just not a lot. They're just plant predominant. Well, you know, that'll work. You know, think about this. If we need to eat less meat for the sake of our health and the planet, and if we need to eat less meat to preserve water and reduce carbon emissions, it'll have a much greater impact if 10 million people eat a little less meat every week than if 10 people become complete vegans. So let's all move in the right direction. And then I think if you are eating clean meat, if you're eating it less often, you know, a lot of the problems related to both health and the environment go away. That said, there's no question that the diets around the world that are associated with the best health outcomes de-emphasize meat and emphasize plants. And, you know, one of the good places to look for that evidence, Jim, is the so-called blue zones. These are 5 places around the world where people most routinely live to be 100 years old and don't get chronic disease. They don't get heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, I mean, all that horrible stuff none of us wants to have happen to anybody we care about. Well, they don't get it. What do they do there? Well, they're physically active. They tend not to smoke. They get enough sleep. They're not stressed out. They have strong social connections, and they all eat diets of minimally processed foods, mostly plants. So they're very diverse. You know, part of the beauty of the Blue Zone story is they're not all the same. So there are Blue Zones in Icaria, Greece, and Sardinia, Italy, where they eat high-fat Mediterranean diets that do include some meat, just not a lot. There's a Blue Zone in Loma Linda, California, among the Seventh-day Adventists, many of whom don't eat any meat at all. They're vegetarian or vegan. There is a Blue Zone in Okinawa, Japan, where they have a traditional Asian diet. Again, very little meat, but not none, and they do eat a fair amount of fish and seafood. And there's yet another Blue Zone on the Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica, where they have a mixed diet that does include some meat and a very strong emphasis on a tuber that grows locally, a potato-like plant. So the diets are quite varied, except they're alike in the ways that matter. Minimally processed foods, mostly plants. They don't have to be all plants. So, you know, again, in your own kitchen, Jim, you're the cook. You ought to be. You've got choices to make, and they've got to work for you and your family. And so there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer. There's just a theme. We should all honor the theme, and then we get to pick the variant on the theme that works best for us.
You know, you evaluated 38 diets, and if anybody's watching television, we're bombarded by various commercial diet programs. You have Weight Watchers, you have Jenny Craig, you have Nutrisystem, but a lot of those diets, the commercial diets that we see on television, Doctor, carry some of the things that you talk about that aren't necessarily good for us. They're processed foods. There's a lot of sodium in it to preserve them, and they're processed. How do those commercial diets rank in this survey?
The rankings available on the page for weight loss, Weight Watchers typically ranks very well. And again, it's for a couple of reasons, Jim. It isn't necessarily that this program is the best. It's that the evidence is the clearest. So, you know, Weight Watchers is for weight loss. It's a big company with lots of resources. They've been able to fund research. And so if we are judging these plans and we're supposed to answer the question, you know, does this work for short-term or intermediate-term weight loss? And we look at, you know, some of these diets and we can't find any clear evidence, we kind of have to shrug our shoulders and say, well, we can't tell. But for Weight Watchers, there are studies that have been done and published, and we look at those and say, yeah, this does work, you know, for the people who stick with it. So it moves up the ranks. Now, you're right, you know, these diets can include sometimes meal replacement or processed foods, but generally, the diets that score well here, it is a good group of judges, people that I think they're highly qualified. We are all looking for evidence of wholesome foods being emphasized. So, you know, meal replacement and protein powders and so forth, I mean, those can help with managing hunger and weight. But by and large, the plans that score well here are encouraging people to move away from the highly processed foods that prevail in our culture toward a greater emphasis on minimally processed, unprocessed foods, mostly plants. And that's true of Weight Watchers, too. Their point system encourages people to eat more fruits and vegetables. You know, if you use the Weight Watchers system, which keeps track of all the things you're eating in terms of mostly the emphasis is on calories, but to some extent on nutrition, you don't have to count points for unprocessed fruits and vegetables. Now, it's not that they don't have any calories. It's just the thinking is these are so good for everybody. You know, we're going to basically not penalize them at all. It doesn't matter how many calories are in fruits. They're good for you. And people who eat more fruits have less problems with their weight, not more. So the emphasis is pretty much the same every time. Now, I'll tell you, there's one thing that I've asked the editors at U.S. News and World Report to include, which traditionally they have not, and that is, would this work for the whole family? I have five children. They're all grown now, but raised five children with my wife. And I think dieting on your own is somewhat misguided. First, if you're a parent with young kids at home, do you really want to go on a diet that leaves them behind? Do you really want to say to your children, you can wait, grow up, and have health problems or get fat, and then you can try and fix it too? Or do you want to say, I love you, I want to protect you now. I want to give you a lifetime of good health, and anything I'm doing to improve my health, I want to share with you. Well, I think most people want to say the second of those. So, you know, I think any responsible parent wants to take children with them toward better health. And I think we ought to be designing plans that are attentive to that. And then the other thing is, you know, if you're an adult trying to lose weight or improve your health and you've got kids at home and they're not on the same plan as you, and so you've got junk food in the house for them, you're going to get a hankering for it and you're going to eat it, and then you're off the wagon. So in unity, there is strength, even if it's only for selfish reasons, even if it's just because you want to succeed, you're going to do much better if you engage the troops. If your approach to eating better is not a diet you go on that leaves everybody else behind, but a diet that works at the level of your household. And this competition has been relatively inattentive to that issue, and I think it's important. And by the way, Jim, just a resource, and this is not about a specific diet, it's just something that may help people no matter which plan they like or pick. As I mentioned, my wife and I have raised 5 kids, and my wife, who's French, is a brilliant cook, and we took all of the Katz family greatest hits and put them online. So our recipes and cooking tips, it's my wife's recipe site, it's called Quizinicity. It's like Cuisine City, but with an I in the middle, Quizinicity.com. And essentially, all the foods that we've raised our family on are available there, freely accessible to everybody. So I hope that may help some folks out.
Another question, Doctor, is as you looked at these diets, which ones are the easiest to follow? Because when you look at some of the commercial diets, whether it's Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, they have these measured meal plans. You have your snacks in between. I'm just talking about the average person, you know, has a family, a bunch of kids. What's the easiest to follow? Where, for example, you don't have to measure things. You don't have to count calories. In other words, it's practical. You don't even have to think about it. You just eat the right foods and you lose weight and you stay healthy. Which ones are the easiest to follow?
You know, it's another really good question, Jim. And so that was a specific criterion in the rankings. So all of the diets in all of the categories that are up near the top, and, you know, again, as folks are listening, if they're wondering, you just go to usnews.com/best diet, or just Google U.S. News Best Diet. You'll pull this page right up and see all the rankings there, and I imagine you're going to link to them. So anything that's at the top of any of these lists, whether it's best for weight loss or best for health or best commercial plan, one of the attributes that got them to the top of that list is we felt they came along with lots of support. So there are recipes available, tips available, and the foods that you're supposed to choose are not hard to find, and you won't be measuring things all day long. So pretty much anything that scored well, we thought was reasonably practical. Now, my personal advice is you can do much better than that. You don't really need to follow any specific diet at all. You really just need to think about a general emphasis throughout your day on minimally processed, mostly plant foods. And then you need to know, okay, what's a reasonable breakfast? And what's a reasonable snack? And what's a range of reasonable dinners? One of the interesting things about wholesome food is that it fills us up on fewer calories. So if your goal is weight loss or weight management, there's sort of two ways to get there from here. One is to carefully count calories and control the amount that you eat. Well, the problem with that is you're probably going to be hungry, right? I mean, if you're eating less than you really want to eat, you're going to be hungry. The other solution is to focus a bit less on quantity and a whole lot more on quality, because one of the many virtues of more nutritious foods is that they tend to fill us up on fewer calories, and so you don't need to be hungry all the time. And again, this recipe site that I recommended, Quizinicity, we use the tagline there, love the food that loves you back. And I think one of the ways that wholesome food and wonderful recipes love us back is we can eat as much as we want. We feel full. But if you're eating lots of nutrient-rich foods, lots of plant foods, you know, you eat plenty until you're full, but you haven't overeaten calories. So, you know, again, anything that's scored high here, pretty practical, pretty doable. That was one of the important considerations. So that, you know, that's true of the DASH diet, and it's true of the Mediterranean diet, and we thought that was true of Weight Watchers and true of the others that scored well. But I don't know that you really need to stick to a specific diet plan at all. You really just need a good set of principles and then be thinking about, okay, what foods do I choose? And one other thing, and that is ask yourself, do you have the skills you need? So, you know, one of the skills that a lot of people need and don't have is cooking. You know, it used to be that everybody knew how to cook, and now hardly anybody does. But, you know, that's a skill you can acquire. You can learn recipes. You can get help with cooking. Or maybe you need help with shopping. Do I know how to identify more nutritious foods in the supermarket? There's help for that, too. So, you know, again, I think what's easy for one person may be hard for another. If you're thinking about improving your diet or your family's diet, making a change, don't just think I'm going to go whether or not I'm ready and set. Think about what do I need to do to be ready and to be set so that when I go into a new diet that's better for me, I can stay the course.
Yeah, because I would say probably the easiest thing to follow is to just spend a lot of your time in the produce department because you're getting fruits and vegetables and buy lean proteins, and it makes it fairly easy versus the other aisles in the supermarket, which contain mainly processed foods.
Well, it's certainly true. And of course, it's a mainstay in the advice from dietitians and other nutrition experts is shop the perimeter of the supermarket. And that's where the plants are and the plant foods and where the least processed foods are. So no question, that's a good idea. But, you know, maybe that's not enough. I mean, what if you don't know what to do with those vegetables when you bring them home? I mean, you can't just eat salad all day. It gets pretty tedious. So, you know, I think there is a need. What about breakfast cereal? I mean, you know, I'm not going to eat broccoli for breakfast, so, you know, can I buy a breakfast cereal in a box? Well, the answer is, of course you can. But it's really helpful to know which is the best one. What do you look for? For example, in my lab, we developed a food label literacy program called Nutrition Detectives to teach that skill set to kids and their parents. And we developed a nutrient profiling system for supermarkets called NuVal, 1 to 100, the higher the number, the more nutritious the food, those kinds of things. So, you know, again, I think advice to shop the produce aisle is good advice, but it's not enough. You really need to know what to do with those veggies.
I guess the final question, we've talked about the things that keep you healthy, the best diets and, you know, things that are going to make you healthy. You're going to lose weight. In your studies, let's talk about the worst diet, if we could, and what made it worse.
One of the ones that came out really down in the rankings that maybe surprised people was something called the Whole 30 diet. What we didn't like, and I can speak for myself or the judges in general, but what we didn't like is unsubstantiated theories, and in particular, unsubstantiated theories that really were at odds with the weight of evidence. So this Whole 30 diet, which is very popular, recommends 30 days of cutting out a wide variety of foods before you selectively add some of them back in. But among the foods that you're supposed to cut out of your diet for 30 days are some of the most nutritious foods accessible to anybody, like beans and lentils. You're not allowed to eat those, and you're not allowed to eat whole grains. And all of the evidence goes the other way. All of the evidence says that including these in your diet helps with weight loss, helps with improving health. What possible sense can it make to cut out whole categories of highly nutritious foods? And the answer is none. And so when the theories made no sense and were not consistent with the evidence, we gave them very poor scores, and they wound up at the bottom of the barrel.
Finally, Doctor, if our listeners would like to find out more about this study that was done by U.S. News and World Reports and your own work, why don't you tell them how they could do so, please?
Well, you can find lots of things about me and by me by going to davidkatzmd.com. That's kind of a portal to all the different things that I do. And then other sites, Jim, and maybe you can link to some of these that I would recommend. My commentary on the Best Diets report, again, it's the column at verywell.com, Diets on Parade. And for recipe help and cooking help, I really can't think to do any better than my wife's freely accessible website, cuisinicity.com.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. It's always fascinating when you take a look at these diets, but there's a lot of commonalities between the really good diets. A lot of plant-based, there's lean protein, there's fresh vegetables and fruits and very little processed foods. And unfortunately, we live in this modern world of ours, and you go to the supermarket and you got aisle after aisle of things that are processed, which we know more and more are not really good for us.
Absolutely true. And Jim, I want to thank you for just a lovely interview. I think you did a really nice job of asking the important questions and helping to reveal exactly that, sort of the key takeaway messages. So it's been a real pleasure.
All the best to you, Doctor, and thanks for coming on the program.
And to you, Jim. Thank you.
I just want to make a favorable mention here. If you Google U.S. News and World Reports, best diets, I think you'll find it very fascinating. There's some great stuff there. They have the best plant-based diets, easiest diets to follow, best heart-healthy diets, best fast weight loss diets. whatever your goals are, diabetes, heart disease, losing weight, becoming more healthy, they've got them all listed there. And you're going to see a number of diets, the DASH diet being number one. I was so fascinated by reading it. I've ordered a couple books on the diet itself because I followed paleo. That's how I lost 20 pounds and got my weight down, cholesterol down, and other things. But the DASH diet seems to be in the most favorable categories and the most numerous categories on diet. If you just Google the best diets, U.S. News and World Reports, and you will find the diets that we've been talking here on this interview. In the meantime, on behalf of myself, I would like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. I hope you found this interview helpful as much as I did. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.